editorial director of Promax BDA, and this is the Daily Brief Podcast. You can subscribe to the Daily Brief Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Podomatic, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. So those of you who listened last week heard me talk to Linda Ong, Chief Culture Officer at Civic Entertainment Group. And during that conversation, we both mentioned our obsession with this most recent season of Black Mirror, which Netflix dropped on December 29th. I brought Linda back today to talk about how she thinks that show reflects the culture and just to discuss our takes on the show in general. So hello, Linda, and welcome back.
Hi, Paige. Thank you for having me.
Always a pleasure. So I'm going to give a little rundown of Black Mirror and a little warning. So first of all, if you have not watched Black Mirror and you want to watch it and you want to be unspoiled, I would postpone listening to this episode because we're going to sort of be no holds barred and we'll talk about what we want. So if you haven't watched it and you're going to, I wouldn't listen yet, but do listen later. And then here's an overview of what Black Mirror is. If you've seen it, though, you know it's an anthology series. I think it's even better described as a series of films because each episode is very much self-contained and they're very filmic in the way that they're produced. The show is set in a world where technology, well, there's a lot of different things going on in this world, but one of the things I think is really interesting is it's set in a world where technology allows human consciousness to be moved around, to be stored in the cloud, to be stored in someone else's mind. Other people can see into people's consciousness or their memories. So all of that storytelling opens up a lot of questions around the nature of human consciousness. What is it? How can you encapsulate it? Can you encapsulate it? Could someone else access it? And then maybe most mysteriously and maybe most interestingly, what happens to human consciousness after the body dies and could that be controlled? So Linda, I'm going to start with the big question, which is when you think about Black Mirror and how it takes on these questions, how do you think that reflects current society? And what do you think the cultural wave is that the show is surfing?
Well, I think that's a big question. The thing with Black Mirror, and I have to confess, I've not been an obsessive viewer until this season. And I think that's part of the cultural view is that I think Black Mirror has always been about pushing the boundaries of technologies, you know, sort of mixed Pandora's box / abundance of riches. And I think that it's had a very sort of dark view of technology and its potential traps and dangers in past seasons. And I think what's interesting about this season are two things. One is, and it's actually made it very controversial among diehard Black Mirror fans, is that one, in a way, I think this season became more accessible to the average viewer because the future views seemed a little bit closer to our real world. So Black Mirror became a little bit more of a mirror and less of, let's say, a window, which it might have been in past seasons where the technologies and the ideas were maybe farther afield than what we could predict. But I think this season, with a couple of these episodes in particular, and I know we'll talk about specific episodes, but I think they felt almost sort of like, oh, that could actually almost happen tomorrow.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and it's interesting because, you know, all the rap about CES this year is everything was incremental and there's no real news, big news. And I think that's kind of where we are in culture is that technology is really so sophisticated that the idea of thinking of these wild leaps has become more difficult. I think that this season seemed to be a little bit closer to, you know, things that could maybe even actually happen or be happening behind the scenes. So I think in both a cultural kind of heat currency way, it makes it easier for a lot more people to watch and enjoy. And on the other hand, it makes, you know, for some people who are, again, are diehard fans, it may not be fantastical enough.
I feel like that's the hipster point of view. Like if everybody else likes it, then it's not cool anymore, you know?
Yeah, well, it could be. And, you know, I think I tried to watch episodes from past seasons and I, you know, to know what it was. I was like, okay, that's interesting, but I wasn't really, really as enamored with it as I was this season. And I think it is because you can really see, wow, we're just sort of around the corner from that happening. But, you know, at the same time, I think it's it's really interesting because we're in a place that is so, we're in so much disorientation in our culture in general, and we really don't know if technology is good or bad. And in fact, I think what's interesting about this season in particular is, you know, one episode that I think a lot of people have really called out, Hang the DJ, which is about online dating, spoiler alert, is actually quite optimistic about technology, which is different for what we expect from Black Mirror, which tends to take a much more dystopian view.
Yeah, we're definitely going to talk about Hang the DJ in a bit. And I mean, I think that you're right in that it forces you to think of questions of like, is technology helping me or hurting me? Is it connecting me or disconnecting me? Is it, you know, is it a place where I need to be all the time? How deep do I need to have this technology run? And I mean, that's what's great about the series is it's almost an infinite level of questions that you can ask about it.
Yeah, and I think also the ultimate moral of all of Black Mirror is it's not about the technology, it's about the humans that use it.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, especially in an episode like Archangel or Crocodile, you know, where you see the use of technology sort of having good intent, but then the way that humans use and abuse it is where it becomes very dark. So ultimately, I think what the morality tale of Black Mirror is, certainly in this season, is that, you know, the darkness is ourselves.
But that's the genius, I think, is that even though the show is playing with these futuristic ideas, it's really telling a story that is as old as Greek myth or Shakespeare, which is what is the human choice around it? What is the morality? And I mean, that's why it's sort of both feels very new and modern, but is also so resonant because it's a story that's always been told.
Yeah, and I think in the history of human civilization, every new technology has been presented as a threat, right? The printing press was a threat.
Yeah.
You know, the television set was a threat. So, you know, there were a lot of, I mean, again, it comes back to humans, right? And what technology increasingly has done is given less control. At the same time, it gives more control to humans. And so, you know, that kind of push-pull, like, we're feeling it right now. This whole idea of fake news and you don't know what's real and you don't know what's fake is part of the luxury of having endless amounts of information at your fingertips.
Yes, 100%.
So everything's really double-sided.
I could really go into a fake news sidebar, but I'm not going to. All right, so let's start with the first episode. I selected a few to talk about, but we'll probably end up sort of talking about all of them in the time that we have. Okay. But so the first episode is called, I'm going to describe it a little. So it's called USS Callister.
Lieutenant Cole, welcome aboard. Crew, we have a new member of the team.
We meet again, Captain Daly!
We're trapped!
Jesus.
Space fleet never turns its back on those who need our help.
Three cheers, sir, Captain Daly. Hip, hip.
Hooray! Hooray!
It stars Jesse Plemons, who I personally think is sort of the secret weapon actor. He was in Fargo. He was in Friday Night Lights. And he's pretty incredible in this piece, I thought. He plays Robert Daly. He's the CTO of a gaming company. He's obsessed with a vintage show called Space Fleet, which is basically Star Trek. And, you know, he's in a way, a stereotype that we see in society today, which is he's a tech genius, but he's a social failure. So he's figured out a way to make digital copies of people and put them in this game that he plays. And in that game, he's the commander of a spaceship, just like the USS Enterprise. And then I read this article on Vulture that I thought was really interesting, which was saying that he's in the story what is called a Mary Sue. So what that means is he's the hero of his own adventure, and he's very narcissistic in the way he positions himself as the hero. And the other super interesting part about this episode is these digital copies of people are self-aware. So they're in this captured hell, but the real life people have no idea. So that's sort of laying out the premise of this episode. I think the other thing is, if you're a Star Trek fan or you've watched Star Trek in your life, it's just kind of fun to watch. So what was your sort of take on this episode? Did you dig it, and what kind of stood out for you?
Yeah, you know, it was interesting because unfortunately I had read a lot about it before I actually saw it, and I'm not the audience for this episode. I found there were other episodes that I enjoyed far more. I think, you know, a couple of things. To me, what stands out, and this probably I may be in the minority, what stands out culturally to me about this episode is not so much what the episode is about, but how the conversation has all been about the pop culture value of this show. So it's tributes to Star Trek. It's, you know, veracity in portraying the Shatner character, how Jesse Plemons looks like Matt Damon. And there was going around about that. I mean, everything about it is so much about the pop culture value of this show, much more than the conversation being about sort of the actual plot or conceit. So, you know, I felt like it was a little bit of a red herring in that it was a great way to get a lot of press. It surely probably played to a very core fan base of Black Mirror and certainly, you know, Star Trek and genre and pop culture and all that. But, you know, it was very, to me, I thought it was remarkable how they really, you know, describe sort of or depicted the fanboy culture of the show, the space show, with the, you know, they had down to the toys and all the artifacts and the posters. It was really lovingly depicted as a fanboy culture show and so or episode. So I found that was the most remarkable thing. It was the first time, you know, short of the only other place I remember fanboy culture being sort of lovingly represented was in the 40-Year-Old Virgin, where Steve Carell was, you know, a collector, and that was sort of his, you know, creating his backstory as a nerd. But so, you know, again, like the value of the narrative for me was less powerful than it was in other episodes. I do think one other thing I want to mention about Black Mirror that's been written about a lot, but I think you know, it is really interesting how the Easter eggs that they're planting in all the other episodes that go back to other seasons, previous seasons, you know, kind of give you a more holistic look at a season. So stuff that happens in the USS Callister episode shows up in later episodes as, you know, a little, if you're paying attention, a little sight gag. So, you know, in the last episode. So those kinds of things, I think, make the viewing itself part of the culture. And I think that's what Black Mirror is also really successful at.
I think for me, one, I'm not a complete Star Trek person, but I do like Star Trek probably more than you. And so that part of it, I really enjoyed and just thought was sort of a fun twist. I think also this was, for me, it was the most, like, it was really fun to see Jesse Plemons and then Jimmy Simpson. I've long been an admirer of. He's in Westworld. He's also in House of Cards, and he's popped up in some other things. So he's a very interesting character actor. And then you have Christine Milioti, who was in How I Met Your Mother and in Fargo. So to me, it was sort of, I was the most starstruck by this episode. And, you know, I'd kept myself unspoiled. So I was like, oh, that's so cool that these people are in it. So I think that drew me in quite a bit. And then also, you know, I watched these with my, I'm joking always that my husband is the ghost guest of this podcast, but I watched that. That was the first episode of Black Mirror that either one of us had watched. And I had said to him, oh, let's check this out. I think you would like it. And he was really into it. So that's always rewarding, you know, when I get to be like, here's something I think you would like. And then he totally does. So I think, and that one also, I didn't find to be such a depressing take on society as much as I found it to be kind of a pathetic and despicable lead character. And so, but it wasn't overall upsetting to me. And the end of it was uplifting, right?
Yeah.
The other thing I was going to point out is
I was not a fan. So
okay, we'll talk about another one that I know you want to.
But the other thing, get me to say anything really positive about it. Yeah, I guess it was uplifting.
Well, the other thing I was going to say, I think was interesting about this season of Black Mirror is just that I think every episode stars a strong female lead. So I thought that was pretty interesting too. If you look back, and you maybe don't even realize it until you're watching, and then by the end of it, you realize, oh, the person on whose shoulders this episode rested was a woman.
Yeah, I agree. I thought I think the casting is really well done. I also think the production design was phenomenal. Some of the locations were incredible. In fact, Crocodile was shot entirely on location in Iceland, where I've just been over in the fall. And, you know, I was actually at some of those places. And you know, it's just interesting where they choose to shoot as the future.
Well, I think the other thing with USS Couser, I think it was the only one. One of the characters was English. And, you know, Black Mirror started on, I believe, the BBC. And then it moved to Netflix after season two. And there was really only a few episodes. So it's really, at its core, a UK show. So I thought that first episode was interesting because that was mostly American actors. But as you go further out with the episodes, it's generally more of a European cast.
Well, I think they mixed it. I mean, I don't remember exactly one by one, but I think that it's interesting because I think it's distinctly not, I mean, certainly English speaking world, but I think it has global appeal because of both the kinds of casting, which are very sort of omnicultural and not your typical, your typical cast, but also really kind of interesting people that young and even Andrea Riseborough in Crocodile, I've never seen her like that. And she was fantastic.
Yeah, she was fantastic. Crocodile is the one that deeply freaked me out. So we can talk about that one a little bit later. Let's talk about one that I think you liked more than I did, which is Archangel.
Mommy, where are you?
I'm 2,000 years old, and I remember when we used to open up the door and just let the kids be.
That one was directed by Jodie Foster. It starred, and actually this one was, you know, Rosemary DeWitt starred, and she's American, Jodie's American, obviously. This one is about a mom who implants her daughter with technology, essentially so she can just keep track of her. And I feel like it starts innocent enough, but that it kind of reveals some things reveals some impulses that maybe aren't so great. So why don't you just talk a little bit about your reaction to Archangel?
Yeah. Well, I mean, clearly it's a parable about helicopter parenting, right? And the perils of having too much information, too much knowledge and control over your kids. And, you know, I think this is, Archangel is one of those episodes where it's like, yeah, that could happen tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I think that in a lot of these episodes, not just Archangel, I think another sort of recurring theme that I think culturally is very resonant is one that we actually, my team had identified a couple of years ago is very emergent, which is that of living in a surveillance culture where everything that we do, which we all know, but I think when you're shown, you know, whether it's an Archangel or a Crocodile or even other episodes where you're shown that everything we do is somehow recordable, or monitorable, that it does kind of, it is sort of a rude awakening because I think that we feel, can feel very anonymous through digital culture, but that we are leaving digital breadcrumbs everywhere. And I think it just sort of is a sobering reminder that, you know, that there's really no way to hide anymore.
It is true because in Archangel, I mean, right now I know I have friends who are parents. I'm not a parent, but I have friends who are parents where they know where their kids are because they can do Find My iPhone, and that's how they track them.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I know what time my son came home last night because his Uber, you know, account is attached to my email. So, you know, and I could not look at that, but I like to know that he's home, even if it's at 1 a.m. on a work night or a school night. But I think that, you know, again, it's like that level of control and comfort has on its, you know, on the negative side, that's either, you know, and he knows it. It's not an infringement of his privacy. But at a certain point, I was watching this keynote at CES that one of our clients at Ford was giving with a Yale ethicist, and he asked people to raise their hands. Would they rather are they more threatened by the records that Amazon has on them or Uber or forgot what the other one was. But, you know, people were more threatened by Uber than anything else, than Amazon. They didn't care if people ever could find out what books they'd read or what movies they'd rented, but they were very concerned about people knowing their exact whereabouts at every moment of the day, which is really interesting and tells you a lot about sort of maybe in a way our feeling that we are kind of elusive and yet we're highly trackable.
I just laugh because I work from home, so it's very easy to know where I am most of the time. I think Google
You may not care about it, but you know there. Who was it? Kyle Richards from the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, and her husband had $1 million break-in in their house in Brentwood while they were in Aspen because she's posting on Instagram that I'm in Aspen, and the report said that you know the robbers knew that nobody was home and some alarm was disabled or it was an inside job or whatever. But you know, social media is. It's not just the apps that track us, right? It's sometimes it's just what we're putting out there. And again, it's not the technology, it's the humans.
Wow, that's interesting. I mean, that really ties in.
I thought, and I travel a lot. People who follow my Instagram know I travel a lot, and I've thought about it too, which is why I have a doorman. But, you know, those kinds of things are all tells. And when you're broadcasting, you can't control who sees this information, even if you think you can. And so when you're literally broadcasting your whereabouts at all times of the day, there are downsides.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Okay, I'm going to move to another episode. This one also is not on my main list, but you've referenced it a couple times. So let's dive in on this one, which is Crocodile. See, I thought that took place in Oslo, but it certainly looks like Iceland. So it's very stark.
Well, I had to Google it because I recognized places that I'd been, and then I just had to make sure I was right. So, And I highly recommend that everyone go to Reykjavik before it becomes too played, because Iceland's amazing, and it's only a 4-hour flight from New York. And Ian Schrager's building a hotel that will open in 2019, so it's going to become. It already is quite a party destination. It's a great place to stop on the way to Europe. But I love that Black Mirror picked it, because I actually think it is a place of the future, and is an amazing combination of sophistication and nature, which are very rare to find. Maybe you can find that in New Zealand, but very rare to find elsewhere. So I like that as a setting because it really, again, I think sets up the technological and human conflict.
Well, that episode to me also is... I mean, the landscape is so stark and the episode is kind of emotionally stark. So in that sense, I also thought they reflected each other. And I'll just set up Crocodile a little bit. Crocodile is...
Well, because she was emotionally very cold. So it was appropriate.
Yeah.
Memories can be subjective. They may not be totally accurate and they're often emotional.
I don't remember anything. It's a total blank.
Picture what you saw. Did you see the vehicle that hit the pedestrian?
I didn't see the actual crash.
Do you mind if I ask you a few questions?
What does that do?
This accesses your memories of what happened. I don't care what you do in your own time. Private stuff is private stuff.
So, Crocodile, anyway, in that episode, there's essentially a crime that's covered up, and then years later, it sort of rears its ugly head, and then steps are taken that just make things exponentially worse as you go along. But it's another very good example, you're right, of what does the ability to monitor people. And in this one, it's pretty invasive because you have the legal option as an investigator to basically tap into what people remember. So it really opens a lot of questions. And at that point, you start to feel like, what would anybody be able to hide or keep private?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that the other thing I think is interesting is sort of memory, which is the least controllable and least conscious aspect of our human existence, perhaps. You know, what happens when memory meets technology, which is the opposite of that, right? And so I think what is interesting is the fact that memory is not actually represented in this film, not as fluid as one would think, and it is a very finite, you know, essentially I think the cultural parallel in the show is body cams, right? Body cameras, mm-hmm. whether it's police or, you know, I mean, kids and dogs are going to have body cameras, but this idea that you can actually capture firsthand what somebody's going through, again, is not really that far-fetched, right? We are recording memories with this kind of technology, and certainly with you know, wearables and things, whether that happens or not, but the, you know, the technology exists where we can, in a way, literally capture our memories. So the question is, what do we do with that, with that information? And, you know, is that something that somebody has a right to their privacy or not? So I think it was just really a fascinating story also for me about kind of the willful ignorance that we have that about these digital breadcrumb trails, that we really think we can get away with stuff that is, you know, everything's a zero and one now. So, you know, just a stark reminder that you can, and it can literally come back and bite you in the butt.
Yeah, I mean, it is a good point, though, that things like body cams or fitness trackers, or I was going to say earlier, yeah, like Google will... Go ahead.
I'm agreeing with you. All that stuff. I forgot to mention fitness trackers. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, like Google, I signed up to say, okay, I'll be a local guide on Google or whatever. It's not even that, I think. I think it's just like Google will say to you, you were here. Do you want to make comments about that? And I mean, again, I'm not that private, but it is a little weird for Google to be emailing me and saying, you were here. I'm like, why do you know that, Google? But it's because you've got your phone and it has GPS on it and it's tied right back in.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
Crocodile was, for a lot of people, one of their least favorites, I've heard anecdotally, because it was really so bleak. I also loved, just from a television standpoint, I loved that, you know, it was sort of like, oh no, you didn't do that, you know, and they did, and they went there, and you kind of were like, they're not going to go there, and oh yeah, they did. And, you know, I think one thing I wanted to say about Black Mirror in general is that I think that and that episode is one example of Charlie Booker really pushing people's buttons, really pushing boundaries and challenging even the length. You know, some of these, in another world, some of these stories would have been half an hour, and to, you know, hang the DJ to go on, you know, an hour plus or whatever, it's a little bit like endurance television, because they're not really films, they are really short stories, and, you know, kind of testing in some ways the boundaries of people's patience to stay with a story and see how it ends up. So I admire what Charlie Booker's doing, and I have to give a shout out to Rashida Jones, because she was a co-writer on Hang the DJ.
Oh, really? I didn't know
but
that.
Yeah, which is why it was good. I think she really has a sense of, you know, dating, internet dating culture, and online and apps, and, you know, interpersonal relationships. So but again, I think Charlie Booker's really doing a great job of challenging the viewer on many, many levels.
Yeah, I will say by the end of Crocodile, I was kind of watching through my fingers. But I will say, yes. Did I enjoy that episode as much as I enjoyed other episodes? No, but I'm not, that kind of stuff is not my bailiwick. That said, did I think it was extremely interesting storytelling and thought provoking? Yeah, absolutely. It was worth watching. It's like you kind of have to, you're right. He pushes those buttons and you have to sort of be in with that. You have to kind of go with it and be like, that's part of the show. But it's not like it's, to me, it wasn't like I couldn't sit with it. I did watch that little part through my fingers, but I felt like it was still, I could still sit there. I could hang with it and I could think about it.
Yeah. I thought it was a great episode, and, you know, and I knew when they brought in the guinea pigs, something, you know, he doesn't do anything that's not intentional, but I never saw that coming until the end, and I thought it was really well done.
It's Chekhov's guinea pig. All right. Actually, I'm gonna just give a shout out. I don't want to dig into it, but these two episodes are of a piece to me. So another episode was Metalhead, which was the shortest episode of the six, and it was shot in black and white, which was interesting. And that one sort of set in this post-apocalyptic world. And that one is just the most sort of like a horror film to me.
Anyone?
Yeah.
Hello?
can't talk for long. We found a dog at the warehouse. I've lost him for now. But my guess is it's still operational. If I don't make it back, I've always loved you all.
Well, it reminded me of The Road, and I believe it was John Hillcoat who directed The Road who did Crocodile. I don't think he did Metalhead, but I was thinking it was almost like The Road. It was my least favorite of all of them because it felt just sort of like a sci-fi horror. I didn't really get a cultural societal moral or POV. It was sort of like a little bit more of a chase and stay alive kind of story. But it just was like, it was kind of gimmicky to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was one that they did kind of because they could. I didn't really feel like it fit as much in the world. And yeah, I mean, I can see where it was of a piece, but I just sort of feel like it was a little bit more of like a vanity project than, it was just like, we can do it and it's fun, so let's do it.
Right. I mean, I would just revisit your point about the strong female leads and all these.
Yeah.
I think is an excellent point. And, I don't know who that woman was, but she was really good.
Well, especially at this time, right? Like, it's interesting to, that's again about Black Mirror, I think sort of maybe not even intentionally or maybe 100% intentionally, but really surfing that cultural wave and kind of going where the zeitgeist is going. So to cast a lot of strong...
I would only just say, sorry, in the kind of, if you look at dystopian or apocalyptic sci-fi stories, everything from, certainly in recent years, from like District 9 to The Walking Dead, you see the kind of more utopian ideal of very egalitarian democratic societies of different races. You see women in leadership roles or in strong, what would be traditional male hero roles. So I think that is part of the canon of fantasy and sci-fi, is that the world has, which is to me really fascinating, that sort of a desired future state of culture is for people to be equal. And yet, we're still battling about whether we should wear black on the red carpet. So it is interesting. That's a whole nother podcast.
Yes. There,
it is interesting to look at these really strong characters that are not, this is not a female empowerment series, but it's like, of course, these are going to be the women that are the leads and the strong, especially like in Black Museum, where she ends up being a much more pivotal character than she's introduced to be.
Yeah.
I do think that's intentional in Charlie Booker's part to kind of put forth this, this sort of traditional idealistic view of at least this sort of the social strata of society, if not like the technological piece of it.
Also, one thing that I really felt like that Black Mirror does is they do seem to cast in a very colorblind way. Like, they don't really seem to be particularly concerned with who's playing, or maybe they are, maybe they're being very intentional about it. But, you see a lot of different, well, definitely a lot of like black casting where you might think this would be two white women or a white couple, and they just mix that up. I don't think they seem particularly concerned about that. And I think that is, A, cool, B, culturally responsive, C, probably true for what the future would be.
Yeah. I also think, from my POV, I would say that British society is much more integrated than the U.S. And so I think that's a much more natural inclination than it is here. So I don't know that it's so remarkable for British television, but it is certainly for Americans.
That's kind of a sad statement for us. So hopefully we will be improving upon
that. We're getting better.
All right.
We're woke now.
So I think we're semi-woke. Some people are more woke than others. All right, Hang the DJ. So we've mentioned it a bunch of times. That's so cool that Rashida Jones co-wrote it. That's great.
So should we check our expiry date? On 3, 2, one, go. 12 hours.
Yeah, 12 hours.
Okay.
Bit,
yeah.
Bit short.
It is a bit short, isn't it?
I used to think that love could
have been mental before the system.
I mean, are we just meant to go at it?
Define go at it?
Oh, fucking hell. But
then you always find your perfect match.
It really does work.
Another relationship.
Hey, coach, is this a mistake?
Everything happens for a reason.
I see Hang the DJ. I don't know if you've seen this episode, but I see Hang the DJ as sort of the spiritual partner to San Junipero, which is a season 3 episode. It won the Emmy for Best TV Movie. And those are the two that really, at least are the ones that I've seen, that really sort of take on what relationships might be like in this imagined world. So Hang the DJ is that people are using a dating app, essentially. It's sort of like one of those Russian nesting dolls in that it's layers upon layers. I don't want to reveal it too much, but and it's definitely one that people, I think that was one that people picked as their favorite for the most part. But any thoughts about Hang the DJ and also what it says about our current state of digital dating?
Yeah. I mean, I think it is one of the most accessible because it's like Tinder, right? And I think, to me, what that Hang the DJ about is really about is algorithms and, you know, the concept that, you know, all the complex calculations that go into matching people, whether it's, you know, on your own with Tinder or where you think you have control or where it's something that's more, created by the brand in terms of finding your perfect match. I think it's essentially about an interesting exploration into what if the algorithms were actually scenarios that were taking place. And I think that in a way it's kind of matrixy like that.
Yeah, completely.
But you know, I actually had to go back and watch it because I don't think I was paying that much attention the first time that I watched it the second time. And I actually thought that, you know, the whole concept of playing out each algorithm was really, really fascinating. I still don't really understand. Maybe someone can explain to you or somebody can explain to me why she looks so different in real life than she did in the algorithm. The only thing I could think about was that maybe she was presenting herself differently online than she was in real life because she was a little more punk, a little bit more, hipstery. And then in all of her online scenarios, she was much more sort of mainstream. And I didn't really understand why that was important to her. So maybe someone could, do you know why?
I read that, but I don't know if this is why, but what I read that as was just to be clear to the audience that now we're in real life.
Okay. Well, yeah.
Just
well,
to
that
make
part
it,
didn't
make her identity
that part
look different
make
to me.
Sense to me. That part didn't make sense to me, but I mean, I thought, you know, it was a great narrative and it is, you know, it's sort of the will they or won't they classic trope, right? Played out against sort of other forces that are in control. But I thought, again, the casting was really good. The guy was amazing. I kept thinking I was watching Jamie Bell and Rosario Dawson, but younger versions. Again, the locations were and the production design were spectacular. I always find that the way they represent technology as really, again, especially this season, so accessible and, you know, like you could actually envision buying those products. The online dating tool looked like a Nest thermometer to me. Yeah. And you know, the little in some of the episodes, the thing that attaches to people's brain, which was in San Junipero, which shows up in a lot of episodes, and the company that makes them, Tucker, TCKR, also shows up in other episodes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I admire the continuity of the world and the way they represent the technology. And I just felt like that episode definitely you could understand why people would find that very accessible.
So that's a good point, actually, on which to land this plane. But before I do that, I'm just going to say one thing, which is I think what Hang the DJ did, and it operated, it did it on a different level ultimately. But when you were watching it, you didn't really realize the level on which they were operating. You learned that at the end.
Oh, yeah. But well, I think that's why I had to go back and watch it again, because I think I took it on a very surface level. And again, I was like, you know, checking my email or paying bills or whatever. And then when I saw what happened, I ended up going back and watching it again completely from the beginning, and I had a completely different appreciation for it. And I think that's another thing about Black Mirror, and part of that's the Easter eggs, is that I do think they these episodes, a lot of them hold up to repeat viewing. Maybe I wouldn't go metalhead with. But another episode that I really liked, because I went back and watched some old episodes, was Nosedive from season 3, which is Bryce Dallas Howard and sort of the perils of becoming too dependent on social media likes.
Mm.
Did you see that one?
No, but I need to. Yeah. No, I'm going to watch them all. I just haven't yet.
That one, again, Nosedive is also one that, you know, feels like, oh, yeah, that could maybe happen.
Yeah,
but it is almost it's one of the most comedic episodes I've seen them do.
Comedic is not usually their strong suit.
No, it's good though. She's very good in it, and it's you know, it's taking social media to its extreme. So
what I was going to say also about Hang the DJ though is that so she goes through these. They both go through these different dating scenarios, and that. And I'm sure you have single friends. I have single friends. I have been single, but I have not been single in the Tinder age. But I think that just rings true because I actually think that sense of I'm just going through this revolving door and doing all these different relationships and they're not really right, but I'm just still staying out there. I think that's actually how it feels to be online dating right now. I mean, you can obviously take yourself out and Hang the DJ. You really were committed. You could not take yourself out. But I mean, I think it is exhausting and it is repetitive and it does feel pointless and it is a numbers game. It's all those things that they reflect in that episode, even though it's ultimately placed in a different situation.
Yeah. I just have to give a shout out to his second girlfriend was so hysterical. I loved her. Whoever that actress was so great.
You loved her yet hated her.
Oh my God. She was so good though. I mean, she just did not hold back. I enjoyed that relationship.
Well, he didn't.
Are we going to talk about Black Museum?
That's going to be the end. That's when we're going to land the plane. So the reason, what I was going to say is, so you were talking about the Easter eggs and tying it all together. And I think that is a part of Black Museum's function. So it does other things, but it also does this sort of amazing thing where it ties a lot of different threads together, which is cool. So why don't you just talk a little bit about your response to Black Museum?
Rollo Haynes. Owner, proprietor. Sure you want to do this? This place ain't for the faint-hearted.
Sure, I can handle it.
Not everyone can.
Well, I didn't really like it.
Oh, I did.
I wanted to like it. I really thought she was cool. I thought the whole idea of this weird, mysterious place in the desert was cool. You know, the conceit of being inside somebody's head was kind of interesting. And then it just went to a place that was too macabre and ghastly for my taste.
It was ghastly. That's true.
Yeah, I had an easier time with her killing the baby and crocodile than Black Museum.
Okay, giant spoiler, but I did warn everyone. Okay.
Well, you said
I warned him.
You said the whole bard. But
I did. Yeah, you're right.
The baby, man. But I said she's going to kill the baby. Trisha said no, she's not. And I'm like, yeah, you watch. She's going to kill the baby, and there it was. But yeah, I don't know. I think it was a vehicle maybe to tie up all the loose ends. And I thought it was going to go to a more interesting place with the stuffed animal and all that. And then it just got too much into itself.
I think that was the point of it. It was supposed to be super meta. And so I like that. I kind of like the quirky, noirish narrator. I thought that was, I mean, it maybe didn't fully work. Anytime you're doing narration and voiceover, that's always sketchy. But I thought it was interesting. I was laughing because at the point where there's a comatose wife and she's, you know, the doctor guy gives him the option, do you want your wife's consciousness in your head? Because, you know, she's a vegetable, basically. And he agrees to this. And at the time, I'm thinking, oh, hell to the no, I would never want that. So, right. Yeah. So that was a really interesting question that they do take to an incredibly dark place. But it was very thought provoking, I thought.
Yeah. Well, you enjoyed it more than I did.
So of the six.
You're right, you know.
Well, yeah, exactly. Of the six, which was your favorite? And I think I know Metalhead was your least favorite.
Yeah. I mean, I would say I really enjoyed, I like them for different reasons, but the three that stand out for me in no particular order are Hang the DJ, Archangel, and Crocodile. I guess I just enjoyed them on all aspects, from technology to storytelling to production to acting to cultural relevance.
So I think I liked USS Callister the most, but I will say that was the first episode I had ever watched. So it was this very, I didn't really know what to expect. I was kind of scared of Black Mirror. I'd heard it was really depressing. So I was like, I'm not sure how I'm going to feel about this. And then I just really enjoyed that episode. So I think it had a big impact on me. Hang the DJ was very enjoyable. And then I think I liked Black Museum. Crocodile, it was very interesting. It was just hard for me to enjoy. Archangel was the one I thought would be the big one because it was directed by Jodie Foster. That was one where people said it was a little on the nose, and like literally on the nose, because she gets beaten on the nose with the monitoring screen. And I kind of agreed with that. Like, that one wasn't so tricky.
By the way, I think Tim Van Patten, I believe, directed Hang the DJ. I can't remember, but I know he directed one of them. I think that, again, the talent that they're assembling for the show is really notable. Tim had done a lot of Sopranos episodes. And so, you know, I just think that it's a great medium for storytelling and for talent of all.
You are right.
In front of and behind the, and, you know, the fact that Charlie Booker is collaborating with people like Rashida Jones is really interesting to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think that winning the Emmy is opened some doors for it. And, you know, it's interesting, too, because, again, when it was airing in the UK, it was only a couple of episodes, which is a model that...
3 episodes a season.
Yeah, very short. So Netflix has sort of allowed it to expand itself, so for better or for worse. But I think it's allowed him to flesh out this whole vision a little bit more, and it gives you a little more to chew on.
Yep, agreed.
Okay, I think that's a good place to wrap it. So, Linda, as always, thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I'll drag you back on soon.
Let's talk after award season. That'll be fun.
We'll talk before that. Award season goes all the way to September. Okay. All right, okay. Thank you. Thank you. Paige Alpiniak is editorial director of Promax BDA. LaFern Cusack is executive producer of the Daily Brief podcast and senior producer at Promax BDA. Video helper provides the music. Digital producer Kate LaCaire-Marion and social media coordinator Kristen Crake contribute to Daily Brief. Follow Paige on Twitter at Paige A. Follow LaFern at LaFern Cusack and follow Promax BDA at Promax BDA. You can reach out to us at dailybrief@promaxbda.org. And you can subscribe to the Daily Brief podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Podomatic, and now on Spotify. Thanks for listening.